to talk about the role of immigration in HIV infection among Asian immigrants living with HIV in New York City. And this is from a study that was funded through the Ryan White Care Act through the local HIV Planning Council. Just a little bit of background on the Asian Pacific Islander population in the United States. It's a very rapidly growing population. The population grew by 71% between 1990 and 2000, and now makes up more than 11% of New York City's population. And 78% of the API population in New York City is foreign-born, so it's a very high proportion immigrant population in New York City. Then a little bit about the Asia-Pacific region and the impact of HIV/AIDS. Asia-Pacific is home to 60% of the world's population, and also 20% of persons living with HIV/AIDS. Currently, prevalence rates are relatively low compared to Africa, but this is changing, and also the absolute number of persons living with HIV/AIDS is very high. So there were 8.3 million total people living with HIV as of the end of 2005, and that included 2 million women, and 1.1 million new infections in 2005. So it's a huge epidemic over there. So in New York City, we're not feeling the same impact, but this study was partially intended to understand the relationships between the Asian American community and the Asia Pacific community. So there were approximately 1,147 cumulative API AIDS cases through 2005. It's been a largely MSM transmission. Women make up 11% of total diagnoses, but they're increasing in their proportion of new diagnoses. 11% overall injection drug use, and a very high unknown mode of transmission. It's actually very unusual compared to the other groups. It's the highest unknown mode of transmission, 26% male and 20% female. And epidemiologists at the health department have surmised that this is partly the stigma around HIV that's stronger in immigrant communities. So they're finding a larger unknown among immigrant populations. And then for the foreign-born, at least 66% of cumulative Asian Pacific Islander cases are known to be among those born outside of the U.S., and 16% have unknown country of birth. And then the largest sending countries for these cases are China, the Philippines, and India. So in the U.S., HIV/AIDS prevalence remains very low, but there are signs of rapid increase. So there was a recent study that was reported in MMWR that showed that APIs had the only statistically significant percentage increase in HIV/AIDS diagnosis rates in the U.S. This was for a period between 2001 and 2004. And this is looking at the race groups as a whole, not looking at the subgroups within each race group. And then in the same period, the New York City Department of Health reported that in New York City, the number of new HIV diagnoses each year has declined in all racial ethnic groups except Asian Pacific Islander. So we're looking at very, very high rates of infection and prevalence among certain communities that have leveled off or declined slightly. So the methods for this study, just very briefly, this study was conducted between January and July of 2005. It involved 89 quantitative surveys in partnership with Columbia, the chain study, and also 35 qualitative in-depth interviews. And this, what I'm going to report, relies on 27 of the 35 qualitative interviews. We recruited most of our participants through two organizations that serve the most HIV positive persons who are of Asian Pacific Islander descent in New York City. That's the Asian and Pacific Islander Coalition on HIV/AIDS and also the Chinese American Planning Council. And we did additional recruitment of participants through GMHC. So here's what we found. We found basically three patterns. A pattern among undocumented Chinese heterosexual male immigrants who were infected during the migration process, and then a pattern among gay men who were infected soon after coming to the U.S. And then I guess I can't really call this a pattern, but there was a single female case who was infected by her husband, and it appeared that the dynamics of immigration may have played a factor in that case, and it's less clear with the other cases. So we had, of the 35 qualitative interviews, we had 27 cases where there were actual stories provided about HIV infection. There were 6 heterosexual males, 15 gay and bisexual men, and 6 heterosexual women, and one of those was a male-to-female transgendered person. And of those 27 interviews, 12 of them appeared to be related to immigration. An additional 8 cases, it was somewhat ambiguous. We didn't have enough of a story, but there were themes of isolation and loneliness after coming to the U.S. that, you know, may have been a factor. And then 8 cases where it seemed pretty clear that immigration was not a factor. Okay, so for the 6 Chinese heterosexual men, they were all Chinese. 5 out of 6 were undocumented. And then 4 out of 5 believed they were infected during the migration process. The 5th person said he saw 10 to 20 prostitutes in Thailand, but said that he used condoms 100% of the time because they wouldn't have sex with him otherwise, which I think is good news in terms of what he experienced there. So we're not sure about his infection. So this here's an excerpt from one of our interviews, and this is a man who's talking about seeing sex workers in Cambodia. And in our interviews with these 6 men, they spent up to 3 years in Southeast Asia on their way to the U.S. Through this undocumented immigration process. So he says, I was very bored and felt smothered at that time. It was 1.5 years there in Cambodia. My friends asked me to go with them to see sex workers. The interviewer asked, did you use condoms? Well, sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. Did you visit sex workers elsewhere besides Cambodia? How about in Thailand? I did not visit sex workers in Thailand. I did that only in Cambodia. And here's another one of our respondents. I was in Thailand in 1990 for half a year. I had hired prostitutes. I had never done this at home because my wife and children were home. So we see some of the family separation issues there. I had contact with sex workers in Thailand, so I surmised that I was infected in Thailand. I would not have gotten it anywhere else. Okay, so then the themes or patterns we saw among gay and bisexual men in the U.S. So again, there were 12 gay men and 3 bisexual men of varying ethnicities. We had Chinese, Indonesian, Japanese, Malaysian, Singaporean, Filipino, and Korean in our sample. In 7 of those cases, immigration seemed to be clearly a factor, and the basic issue was an issue of sexual freedom. So having been very repressed or feeling oppressed in their country of origin, and then coming to the U.S. and feeling very sexually free and doing a lot of experimentation without really having preparation for that. And then in one case, there was kind of a twist. One of our respondents said that he was told by friends that he would have an easier time getting asylum as a refugee in the U.S. if he were HIV positive. And he said that he didn't deliberately try to get infected, but that he was less careful because he felt there would be benefits to being HIV positive. And so that was one case. But most of them were related to this idea of sexual freedom. So here's a quotation from one of our interviews. You know, because it was very easy, a lot of bars on the street, maybe the next street, maybe over there, a theater, a bathhouse, a park, any sex place, too many kinds of places, you know, they influence you. And then here's another man from Indonesia. So much different gay life in New York compared to Indonesia. In Indonesia, you feel like you don't tell anybody you're gay. When I got here, really, I'm like, okay, this is gay life. Okay, come on, let's go try this and try that. Maybe I don't realize that if you play around and you kind of trailed off there. I didn't feel like thinking about that. You feel like, oh, this is New York like that. So that was what I was thinking about the first year that I was here. And then this case of women reuniting with male partners. I mean, we've heard through our service work a lot of cases of this, but in our interviews, we only could find one clear case. This idea of women infected by male partners after joining them in the U.S. after a period of separation. And this raises issues of gender roles where, traditional gender roles where women may not feel comfortable asking what their husband did during the time of the separation, and also if citizenship or sponsorship is an issue, women may feel dependent on their husband for just being able to stay in the country. And so in this case, an Indian woman was separated from her husband for 2 years while he traveled in South Africa and then came to the U.S. She joined him in 1990 and then tested positive in 1992. She was unsure of how he was infected. She did have a story about an accident he had in India where he received quite a bit of blood during a transfusion. So she thinks it may have happened there. The other four cases, three of the women had met their husbands or boyfriends here in the U.S., and their boyfriends were also Chinese immigrants. And they said that they didn't know very much about their sexual histories and never talked really about condom use. So in conclusion, I just want to say that, you know, talking about undocumented immigration and HIV infection is it's a very dicey issue in a climate that can be very anti-immigrant. And so the intention here is really to understand the dynamic in order to be able to address it. So in conclusion, I mean, what we're finding is that API immigrants may be at increased risk for HIV infection during the immigration process and immediately following. There may be strategic moments for providing education and support during the migration process that can reduce infection rates. And so I just want to talk about the connection to what Miguel is talking about with the church. Churches in immigrant communities and in Asian immigrant communities also are very key places for people to find support soon after they come into the country because of language and cultural barriers and social isolation. So, you know, being able to work with those types of institutions may help addressing these types of problems. So providing support and education for new immigrants early on so that they can initiate early treatment if they are infected, and also provide education to partners of people who are infected, who may not have that information when they come into the country. Great. So thank you very much.